This episode is part two in a two-part series. Please listen to part one before continuing with this episode. This series includes discussion of violence, child abuse, sexual violence, murder, and crime scenes. Some outdated terminology for sex work is used in the context of quotation and legal documentation. Listener discretion is advised. This is The Fall Line. Last time, we brought you the story of a woman who'd been known as the Lyon County Jane Doe, a murder victim discovered in a ditch in rural Iowa in October of 1978, who the local sheriff's department worked to identify for 28 years. In 2006, when her fingerprints were run through the national system for what investigators thought was the second time, her identity was finally revealed. According to the Sioux City Journal, the victim had once been arrested and fingerprinted in a Los Angeles police precinct. The Lyon County Jane Doe was Wilma June Nissen, a 23-year-old Californian who'd spent her earliest years in extreme neglect. She'd been moved into foster care around the age of 10, lived with a number of families, and hosted in at least one group home. By 17 or 18, she'd left the foster care system for good and lived a life spent mostly on the road. Evidence provided by those who knew her and via her arrest records suggested that she mostly earned money through sex work. Wilma had several serious relationships. One of the earliest was with her first husband, Donald Wellington, with whom she left California. Eventually, she had three children, two of whom were either taken by or given into the custody of the state. One year before her death, Wilma gave birth to her third and final child, a girl named Chrissy. Per the Sioux City Journal, Wilma married Chrissy's father, Robert Irvin, in 1977, the same year Chrissy was born. Wilma was still traveling the U.S. then, but she was back in California at the time of Chrissy's birth and living near her final foster family, the Hosses. And so it was arranged that Chrissy would be adopted and raised by the Hosses. They had been older than the average parents when they cared for Wilma, and when Chrissy came into their lives, they were old enough to be her grandparents, great-grandparents even. Chrissy grew up knowing very little of Wilma. She imagined that her mother was out there somewhere, maybe with another family. She tried to find Wilma a few times, but didn't get far. However, a friend's mother actually helped Chrissy track down her biological father, who was able to fill in some gaps. But Chrissy never found out as much as she wanted. The Lyon County Sheriff's Office is still trying to fill in gaps in Wilma's timeline, too. For instance, at one point, they know she traveled as far southeast as Atlanta, and why. Detectives had spoken to friends as to Wilma's reasoning there. But how had she ended up in South Dakota and then in Iowa in 1978? What circumstances brought her into that area, somewhere near Sioux City or over the state line in Lyon County, where she was murdered? Chrissy has her own questions, but she never had much more than a name to go on, Wilma June, and a photo she'd found at the Haas' residence. It wasn't until 2006, when the Lyon County Jane Doe was identified, that things fell into place. That same friend's mother, who'd found Chrissy's father, one day she came to Chrissy and showed her the newspaper with Chrissy's mother's name in the headline. From that point on, Chrissy's life was a whirlwind. We talked to Chrissy about her discovery and everything that followed when we interviewed her in the summer of 2021.
What do you remember about, like, the media coverage at the time she was identified?
When they identified her, I was in the process of relocating, and I didn't have internet at the time, and I don't even think I had a cell phone at the time. So I wasn't exactly easy to contact. I had like an email and that was it. And it wasn't super nationwide news. So the media was the occasional newspaper clipping I would see or my correspondence between the Rock Rapids Police Department. So my view of it was pretty impressed with the way they treated her, with the way they cared about her and cared who she was.
We don't always see such respectful articles about people's cases that we cover. It seemed like there was a general caring air about the articles that were written about Wilma.
Overall, there was. There was one reporter that did a lot about my mom's case. She cared. I still talk to her sometimes. She was really good.
That reporter was Dolly Butts. She authored many of the Sioux City Journal articles we've referenced in this series. Her cover of Wilma's identification and the findings that came after made our research into certain aspects of this case possible. When Wilma's identity was discovered, a service was held to put a proper nameplate in place. And this time, the cemetery's caretaker wasn't the only attendee.
Can you tell me your experience of her memorial service?
I did not go. The Holtys were there, her first foster family. I did get grandparents out of the whole tragic situation. I did meet the most amazing people, and I consider them my grandparents. I always wanted grandparents when I was a little kid. It just took being an adult to get some. But they're great.
From the photos, it looks like there were so many people there.
Yeah.
People who didn't even know her wanted to be part of her story and help her get justice.
Yes. The sheriff that was the original sheriff on the, he passed away a few years ago. I sadly never got to meet him, but Craig Vinson was there. Of course, Sheriff Blumenthal was there. A bunch of really amazing people. The Rock Rapids Sheriff's Department were there. My friend's mom was there. And a bunch of the people from the town that remember her case.
Chrissy did eventually make it there to meet the people who had worked on Wilma's case. Testing was done to confirm that she was indeed Wilma's daughter, and then she made her way from California to Iowa, where she would speak with the investigators, see her mother's grave, and, eventually, be present at an exhumation. Because once investigators had a name, they hoped that newer technology, testing that hadn't been available in 1978, might lead them to Wilma's killer. Plans were made to exhume Wilma in September of 2007. Chrissy viewed the first portion of that exhumation process as her mother's remains were removed from the grave and prepared to be taken to the lab.
I mean, it was raining, and it's a beautiful little town. It's rural Iowa. It's a beautiful little town, and it was just weird because, I mean, we hauled up there. It was raining, and we're watching them dig up her grave, and they're real hopeful. They're really hopeful that there would be DNA. I just remember them. They took out the concrete liner, and then they took out her casket, and it was just so tiny. That was the thing that threw me. I was like, Jesus, it's so tiny.
Yeah, she was itty bitty. I definitely have my father's build.
I know I never knew her, but it's still super emotional for me. They took the casket into a building, and I didn't want to go in there. I didn't ask to. I wasn't capable of that. Finding out what happened to her being identified, answered, 50 questions, but brought about 500 new ones and made them just so much more complicated.
The exhumation went on as planned, but only to a point. There was a major blow in the investigation, and personally, a blow to everyone involved in the case when Wilma's casket was finally exhumed and a discovery was made. Her remains had been badly damaged by water. The casket itself had degraded, making it vulnerable to the elements. According to the journal, there were, quote, more than 40 gallons of water in the body bag. The water destroyed the possibility of finding the killer's DNA on Nissen's remains. Still, investigators followed up on every possibility. Fingernail scrapings, tests, examinations. A forensic anthropologist took several months to examine Wilma's remains, searching for a cause of death. But in terms of DNA collected from Wilma's body, so far, the water damage had been too severe for anyone to successfully take a sample that might identify the suspect or suspects. We spoke to Lyon County retired Chief Deputy Jerry Berkey about how the investigation changed after Wilma's identification, both in terms of how the department began to gather information and the decision to proceed with the exhumation. Because much of their evidence had been retained above ground as well, the Lyon County Sheriff had decades of material to review with their new key information, Wilma's identity. We also discussed the results of the exhumation.
The officers in 78, I assumed they were thinking of the future because we did have muscle tissue from Wilma, which we were able to later use for DNA. We had her hands, and I think they thought ahead enough for the future to save us some evidence that maybe technology could help us with in the future.
That seems like some pretty prescient thinking on the part of the department.
Right. They even saved soil from underneath her body, which was still available in 2002 when I started working the case. We were very disappointed at first because the casket was full of water. So we were worried about what that would do to any DNA evidence. We did ladle the water out of the casket, and we did take Wilma to the medical examiner's office in Ankeny, and they more or less completed another autopsy for us. So even though originally it didn't seem like the exhumation was fruitful, in the end, it was very vital because we were able to come up with the cause of death, which really helped us develop theories about how she died.
I understand that the investigators also siphoned some water off from the coffin to test, correct? To see if anything could be extracted. Didn't know if there would possibly be anything in that water, but didn't want to waste the chance.
Correct. We strained the water through cheesecloth, and we're also trying to think into the future. Even though it might not be useful to us today, might it be 20 years from now? So we did keep everything that we did in case it could be useful in the future.
Lyon County didn't stop there. Though they have never publicly released the cause of death in Wilma's case, the sheriff's office did address the press on other findings. Then Sheriff Blumendahl told Sioux City Journal reporters that he planned to send evidence for testing to FBI labs. In particular, he focused on the rope that had been tied around Wilma's legs, one that investigators believed had been used to drag her to the ditch on Highway 182. The rope still bore two knots. The sheriff described them as, quote, tied in a clove hitch at one end and a slip knot at the other end. He thought that single item might tell them quite a lot if examined carefully. Blumendahl told the Journal, quote, it would be my contention that when you tie the knot, you will have scraped DNA off your own fingers when you tied that knot. In my opinion, being that the rope has been dry, DNA loves to be dry, the probability of the bad guy's DNA being under the knot is significant. The probability of it being there, capable of them testing it, may not be as significant, but it's a free test for me. I want it tested. I want a knot specialist to look at the knots and tell me, is this person left-handed or right-handed? And I do want to know what's special about these knots. Plans were also made to send the FBI evidence that Iowa's own labs had already examined, Wilma's pants, underwear, and fingernail scrapings. Perhaps the FBI would have the ability to find something that Iowa's own lab couldn't. We couldn't find updates in the media regarding the results of those tests, and we were unable to speak to the present sheriff about them. But we do know what the office did as they waited for those results back in 2007. Traditional, boots-on-the-ground investigation. We discussed that research with retired Chief Deputy Jerry Berkey.
Once she had been identified, at what point did you roughly begin to develop theories as to what had happened in this case?
I would say theories about what happened in the case probably came after she was exhumed. I think between the time she was identified and up to the point of when she was exhumed, we concentrated on building a timeline for her, finding all the background we could for her. And that took some time. And reaching out to people, at one point, there was fairly nationwide publicity about her identity, and we did have people from the West Coast calling and offering what they knew about her and people that actually did know her. So we probably spent that first year, maybe year and a half, building her timeline, trying to find family members of hers.
I have to imagine that building the timeline of someone, once you've identified them, who has moved around a whole lot, doesn't have much immediate family that's easy to identify, must have been quite difficult, even with some tips coming in. Is that one of the reasons that Lyon County mentioned in a couple of articles that they were looking for Wilma's ex-husband, Donald Wellington, trying to fill in some more places on the timeline?
Yes, yes. It would have been very helpful for us to find Mr. Wellington. In fact, the sheriff and I spent a couple of days in Palmdale, California, actually walking the streets, and we had got a tip that he was homeless in Palmdale, and we spent a lot of time with the homeless people in Palmdale, California, trying to find Mr. Wellington, but we weren't able to do so.
Do you know of any other people from Wilma's life who the sheriff might be still interested in finding today?
Well, when I retired in 2018, I was really searching for, and we did ask the media to help several times. We were searching for a light-complected black female who was born and raised in Thunder Bay, Canada. And she was dancing the circuit in our area under the name of Peaches. And we were never able to find her. And I do think they would appreciate if they could identify her and talk to her.
The name Jerry Berkey mentions there, Peaches, is one of a few that have become important in this case, or rather, that have been released to the public as important in this case. It's likely that the Lyon County officials have known of her existence and of others since at least 2010. It's fair to speculate that at least some of that information was gleaned when the perjury charges were filed and then dropped against a man named John Van Gameren back in 2009 and 2010. It was, to our knowledge, the first arrest made in relation to the case of Wilma June Nissen. Van Gameren was never a suspect in the case, not directly anyway. But based on reporting around the case, it was clear that investigators felt he knew something about Wilma's death. It was rumored that he'd hosted a number of private parties, the ones that dancers and sex workers from Sioux City would attend. A 2009 journal article by Dolly Butts broke down the specifics of the six perjury charges Van Gameren faced. According to her interview with John Moeller, quote, investigators learned of Van Gameren while canvassing an area within a five-mile radius of where Nissen's body was found. According to Butts, Van Gameren was subpoenaed for questioning. The Journal Access public documents filed in Lyon County District Court that specifically detailed the perjury charges, which were as follows. And keep in mind, this is the direct language of the court. That Van Gameren, while under oath, knowingly made a false statement or falsely denied knowledge of the following material facts. Knowing Annette Jacobson after being shown two photographs of her. Transporting a stripper or prostitute from Sioux Falls to his residence. Having dancers at his home on more than two occasions. Ever having prostitutes at his home. Having his wallet stolen while with a prostitute. Arranging strippers to come to his home for a bachelor party. End quote. That name, Annette Jacobson, came up a few times in articles, but we aren't sure how she specifically relates to the case. There are two women that Lyon County officials are interested in, including the woman named Peaches, but neither has ever been publicly identified as Annette Jacobson. Based on everything we read, it seemed officials' primary interest in Van Gameren was his knowledge both of the people Wilma would have been associating with at or around the time of her death, and, most likely, a party that occurred on the actual evening of her murder. That's just educated guesswork, and it hasn't been confirmed by authorities. But it's clear that there's some connection to be made. We asked Chrissy what she knew about Van Gameren's role in the case during our interview.
I don't know all of the details from it, but it from what I understand, he had been having parties in the 70s, and he'd been having dancers and prostitutes at these parties, and he didn't want to fess up to it because the area that he's in, the area that they found her in, is very conservative. It's very small town, rural Midwest. They're not going to fess up to, even if it was, you know, decades ago, they don't want to talk about that. That didn't happen. So he didn't want to admit, even though they knew, he didn't want to admit that he'd had, you know, adult entertainment at his house. But they needed information to find out, you know, who she'd been around and find, you know, hopefully find her killer. And they can't do that if they don't have any information, you know?
So can you tell us what became of the perjury case?
The perjury charges were dropped. I don't know exactly what all was worked out, but it worked out enough that they dropped the perjury charges. He wasn't a suspect. They didn't think he killed her, but they thought he might know who did. There's somebody out there that knows more than they think they do.
Was that someone John Van Gameren? We can't say for certain, of course, but his charges were dismissed in 2010. And at that time, Lyon County officials made a statement on the dismissal and on the status of Wilma's case, the same case that had brought his perjury charges in the first place. Per the Journal, the Lyon County prosecutor, Carl Peterson, announced that, quote, "The investigation has substantial new information to determine the fate of Ms. Nissen when John Van Gameren's perjury charges were dropped, but declined to go into more detail." Some of that information has been recently made available to the public. The Lyon County officials likely held this close to their chest for some time, maybe since the dismissal of the perjury charges. We don't know why they finally chose to share this information, but it was a bit of a bombshell. In 2016, the Lyon County Sheriff's Office released a photo of a suspect in Wilma's murder. They also released a name, a nickname. It wasn't Peaches, but rather her associate. Per the Sioux City Journal, the photo was of, quote, "a black female who went by the stage name Sugar, who worked as a dancer, escort, and prostitute at parties in and around Sioux City, South Dakota, and in Lyon County during the summer of 1978, end quote. It seems that Wilma and Sugar both worked, at least in some capacity, for a service which used both the names Playgirls and Playmates. Though the business was based in South Dakota, dancers and sex workers regularly crossed state lines over into Iowa to attend parties in Lyon County. Parties like the one that officials wanted to question John Gameren about all the way back in 2009. Jerry Berkey told the Journal in 2016, quote, "People in the western half of our county got very defensive when we first approached them about these parties. What we're trying to get them to realize is, we don't suspect one of you, but we do hope one of you will come forward and say you saw our victim with Sugar at one of these parties." The sheriff's department apparently has quite a bit of information on this suspect, including her full name and her movements after Wilma's death. None of that has been released to the public, save a basic summary that Berkey gave the Journal. He said that, quote, "Our suspect fled to Canada soon after our victim was killed. She then stabbed a person in Canada and had to flee Canada back to the United States." We don't know how many other alleged or confirmed murders this person of interest is tied to, or where she ended up, but Lyon County seems to. And, it seems, their interest may be in finding people to verify what they suspect, not to fill in large gaps in their knowledge. And why do they suspect that Sugar killed Wilma? Per the Journal, the apparent motive was robbery. Sugar was rumored to frequently rob other dancers and escorts, and may have worked with others to do so. According to an earlier Sioux City Journal article, they've given repeated polygraphs to one suspect, who has failed, and they've gotten a pretty good sense of the order of events that occurred on the night that Wilma died. It seems, though, that Lyon County steadily developed a list of names. They certainly were able to obtain photos. And if they believe that Sugar killed Wilma, wouldn't it be reasonable to assume that she'd had help? If not in Wilma's actual murder, at least in dumping Wilma's body in the ditch on Highway 182? It doesn't seem likely that a lone woman could pull that off, not based on the way that Wilma was dragged and placed. But even more so, Lyon County law enforcement's continued interest in speaking to multiple people, including Peaches, who so far hasn't been found, seems to reinforce that scenario. We talked over the suspect pool with retired Chief Deputy Jerry Berkey.
Investigators have released some information about the suspects in Wilma's death and the motive and the circumstances. What can you tell us about those aspects?
I think if they could locate Peaches, it would go a long ways to verifying the theories. Until that happens, I don't know if the answer is going to be CODIS allowing amplified DNA in. If it would, we definitely have three or four people that would be at the top of the list to try to match DNA with. I think the current sheriff is hoping a deathbed confession is going to be coming, because this is an old enough case now where suspects are starting to pass away, or persons of interest are starting to pass away. People with knowledge are starting to pass away. I myself am fairly confident that there's several people that know what happened to Wilma, and they're just not willing to come forward with it.
Do you think they're afraid?
You know, I can tell you from back in the 2000s that a lot of the public in Lyon County took the attitude, she's not one of us, she wasn't from here, whoever did this to her isn't from here. And that's the attitude they had. I do know Sheriff Blumenthal himself, people were concerned about how much money he would spend working on this case. There was some, I'd say, possibly political backlash over some of the people we were talking to, some of the people we were possibly putting a little heat on. But I do think there's local people in Lyon County that if they don't know what happened to her, they suspect they know, and they have an idea of what happened to her. Because I believe, and I believe Agent Mueller himself would confirm this, I do believe we know where it happened to her at, and it was in Lyon County.
Peaches seems to be a linchpin in the case. In 2016, then-Chief Deputy Berkey told Sulan Proud, quote, "The cause of death also makes us realize that one person didn't do it alone." He indicated then that the woman known as Sugar likely had, quote, "help in murdering Wilma Nissen." The theory presented in the article is that Peaches worked with Sugar to rob Wilma, specifically after a party they'd all attended, and that at least the two of them would be implicated in Wilma's death. Others would certainly be aware of what happened, and some might be accessories after the fact. Apparently, Lyon County has amassed quite a bit of evidence, and at the time of this recording, they're still trying to locate Peaches. Perhaps just a few more tips, a few more leads, a few more calls might just pull this all together. It seems like the former sheriffs and deputies of Lyon County never truly retire from Wilma June Nissen's case. Whether they knew her as the Lyon County Jane Doe or by her real name, they all keep coming back. To her grave when it was marked Our Girl, and then to give interviews about the case as experts, to join Chrissy when she asked in media outreach, to speak to podcasters. We asked Jerry Berkey how working on Wilma's case shaped him, how it stayed with him, even now when he's moved on to other work.
You know, I spent a lot of time on it, and I spent years on it, and it became personal. For instance, I don't like doing interviews. I don't like doing TV interviews, radio interviews, and I was asked to do one a couple months ago. I told the sheriff, I'll come there, I'll help you, but I will not be on camera. But when I walked in the room, Chrissy was there. when I saw Chrissy, there's no way I wasn't going to do anything fast. I can't imagine being Chrissy and growing up not knowing where your mother's at and then finding out this happened to your mother. Chrissy was not, up until a couple months ago, she wasn't kept in the loop real well. She wasn't shown pictures. She wasn't provided information that we had because it was a case we were working fairly hard. In my mind, it finally came to the point of she has a right to know, and I'm not a police officer anymore, so I can tell her what she wants to know, what I know, and the sheriff kind of agreed that if it came from me, we'd be okay. I just can't imagine being Chrissy. And I say Chrissy just because she's the only family member I know of. But for anybody out there to not know where their mother's at, what happened to their mother, it's just unfathomable. I wish we could tell her more.
No matter what, Chrissy works with what information she has, and she keeps working. It's been that way for a long while, but especially in the last few years, as she's turned to the internet for help, contacting podcasters, reaching out to Facebook groups, trying to attract the attention of armchair detectives and internet forums. Sometimes the reception has been welcoming and even helpful. Sometimes it's less so.
I had someone on Reddit, where I've been fairly active with her case, I had people trolling me saying that I'm lying, that she's not my mother. Prove it. I'm going, how do I prove this? Someone went so far as to a group that I'd posted it in to put a, I guess it's a thread, because I don't know how to Reddit. I'm old, you know? And somebody actually put a thread in this saying, this person with my username is lying about being the daughter of a murder victim. I'm going, what? Seriously.
So there have definitely been not good aspects of the Reddit forum.
Yeah, there's been people have been mostly really great. There's just been, you know, there's going to be internet trolls no matter what.
She gathers information and works on the case and keeps at it. It can feel strange. Sometimes this closeness that's developed, something she's only gotten to experience after her mother's death. She's close to this case. She's gotten to know Wilma that way, and she's seen some of her own life reflected back.
It's not like I was close with her. I never even met her. And I mean, even my husband doesn't understand why it bothers me so much. And sometimes I don't understand why it bothers me so much. Am I just being pure drama? But she still, I wouldn't exist if it wasn't for her. She was my mother. Whether I knew her or not, we had way too much in common for me to not. I see a lot of parallels, you know? There's a whole lot of things that I look back at my dumb choices, and I look at Wilma's dumb choices, and I go, how come she didn't get to live? If anyone deserved to, it was her, you know?
Yeah. There are parallels.
I mean, everything from the, you know, same parents for a while. There's a whole lot her and I had in common that I never knew. Kind of wild.
Chrissy set up her own Reddit forum to collect any information about her mother. Tips, memories, anything that might come in. Maybe information that people would feel more comfortable sharing on Chrissy's Reddit than sharing with police. You can find her there. The forum is named after Wilma, r/WilmaJuneNissen, and Chrissy updates a number of other true crime pages and forums about her mother's case. It's a rotation that she keeps up because, well, what's the alternative? Wilma's name drifting further down the news cycle as more articles about her end up behind archive paywalls? Chrissy can't let that happen.
I'm afraid that she's going to be forgotten. The current sheriff in Rock Rapids, he's a great guy. I talked with him the other day. Great guy. But this case is well before his time. And it's not like there's been a whole lot of activity, and I'm kind of kicking myself for not doing this sooner. I probably should have done this when I first found out, but I didn't. And I'm really afraid that it's never going to get solved. I hear very frequently that the people or person responsible for murdering her could be dead. And that's true. And I don't want to just sit by idly and wait if they're not, and let them just live their life. Like, I don't care, because she was a person. She was my mother, even if I didn't get to know her. And she struggled enough in her life for somebody to take her life like that. They need to pay for it. She had a rough, horrible, tragic life. And she maybe did some things that weren't socially acceptable and made some mistakes. She didn't deserve to end like that. She did not deserve to have her life taken from her. Where she got dumped is still a rural field now. Back then, someone dumped her there. If that person that found her body, they had tripped over her pretty much. They were laying phone cable, I believe, in a field in the middle of nowhere. If they weren't doing that, they would have never found her body. And whoever dumped her there knew that. She didn't deserve that. No matter how many mistakes anyone makes, they don't deserve that. And she may not have a whole lot of people that are alive that loved her, but there's a few of us. And I will do everything I can. I just want to know who, and I want to know why.
If you have any information in the unsolved murder of Wilma June Nissen, please call the Lyon County Sheriff Department's Detective Amy Stoner at 712-472-8326. Or send an email to amy.stoner@lyoncountyia.com. There's a $10,000 reward in Wilma's case. Visit Chrissy's Reddit forum, r/WilmaJuneNissen, for updates on her case. And if you know of a case that should be covered on the Fall Line, there's a link to our case submission form in the show notes. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is a fully independent show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIA, pay our content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try out the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. And if you'd like to support the show and the stories we cover, join us on Patreon. We raise Patreon funds to continue to fund the Milberg Twins billboard and to build a therapy fund for families who've been on the show. Each and every one of our patrons helps us continue that work, and we're grateful for your help. On Patreon, you can get early release, ad-free versions of our regular episodes, plus blogs and videos for only $5 a month. We've added video live streams, which all patrons can enjoy, starting at just $1. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Lauren Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kim Fritz, and Kiana Burgess. Interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced, engineered, and scored by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd. Currently, our monthly donation is going to private investigations for the missing. Please, join us in supporting this nonprofit. They need funds to help families access the services of PIs.